first started my career in law enforcement, some of the supervisors would be like, man, how the hell do you know that's where they hide that? That's where they put this at. That's where they do this. And it's because, man, I grew up in the criminal element, seeing it my entire life. Like I said, at 5 years old, I knew what meth looked like. I knew what crack looked like. I knew what these things did. I knew how you smoked it, how you ingested it, what the side effects were, how people look. And so you can't teach those things. That's either, some people would be like, man, when you turn, they go to the aspect, man, when you, when I was in law enforcement, like, you ain't got but 2 years experience at the time. And I was like, yeah, but dude, you just learned what a crack rock was, or what marijuana smells like when you went through basic law enforcement training. I knew what that shit was when I was five.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now. $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference. Click the link. Register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference. 111-110.
Street cop.
Will, how many people are you the chief of?
Nine. I got nine other people. That's it.
I was gonna say, man, because when I see a young chief, we had a guy here yesterday from West Virginia who was at a training class, and he's like, I'm the chief of police. I'm like, you're 22. I was wrong. He was 25. I said, what is it, you and another guy? He goes, no, it's just me. I'm just the chief.
Shut up. Okay. Yeah. I think it's more time. This town used to be like that. This town used to be one of those towns, I think, with one person. When I got here, we had five. So then we increased up to nine others.
Dude, I've been a lot of places around the country. It's not uncommon for police departments to consist of one chief or a chief and a patrolman, or like a chief and a part-timer. There are places.
Yeah. And that's what it is for us. So it's us, and then we have not the other nine guys that are there all part-time. So it's not, I'm the only full-time person that's there throughout the week. And then weekends and stuff like that is covered either by part-timers, or sometimes even our sheriff's office may assist us with some calls.
It's interesting. It's interesting stuff. People don't realize that in most parts of the country, a lot of places, it is run like that. It's very different than what we're used to in like metropolitan / suburbia.
Yeah. I think it was interesting. I think when I first went on the show with On Patrol, that was one of the things they had talked about, how a majority of these agencies across the country are relatively small in size. And there's very few that have, I guess not very few. There's a lot that have a bunch of officers in there, but majority of them across are relatively small departments. They were saying it's pretty common compared to what they've seen before in the past as well.
When you talk, I hear just this faint feeling of a mid-90s Bill Clinton.
It's not, dude. It's apparently I am Bill Clinton. I hear everybody talk, man. I've heard that since I've been on that show, man. 1,000 comments a week. Is that Bill Clinton? Is that Bill Clinton? Kept going on and on. It was a running joke around here, man. So around the entire county, everybody was like, "What's up, Bill?" And
dude, your name is Will.
It is Will. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, man. It's devastating to hear it, but I've gotten used to it by now.
Dude, it's pretty fucking crazy that you sound just like him. And you don't look like him, I'll give you that.
No, at least I've got something going for me.
You do have a very thick Southern accent. So tell us about you, man. Where are you from? What do you do?
I'm from Brookford, North Carolina. Very, very tiny town. It's inside of the city limits of a, I'd say it pretty much surrounds itself in another city that's called City of Hickory, which I would say roughly has 45,000 people in it. The county itself is a pretty large county from one side to the other, roughly an hour. I would say they have maybe 400,000-500,000 people in the county, I would say, roughly. And it could be less than that. It's a pretty decently sized county. I think the sheriff's office in general is probably 200 officers, 300 officers. Maybe if you include detention and jailers and stuff like that, it might be more. And then the city of Hickory itself, they probably have like roughly, I'd say, 200 officers as well. So we're located in a pretty urbanized area, but Brookford is just a little tiny mill town. It started in 1907. It was a mill town for its workers, and it eventually, I think the way that the town was created was the last name of the two mill workers when the factory shut down. One of them's last name was Holbrook, and the other one's last name was Shuford. They put that together and made Brookford, and that's how we got our name. Wow. We got 500 people in the town. It slowly but surely over the last few years now, we've started to hit like a little bit of a growth spurt, so maybe going up. But as of right now, it's like roughly around 500 people.
So tell me about your career in law enforcement. How did it start?
Okay.
What do you do now? Your progression and experiences that you've had thus far.
So I started out in a city police department called Statesville, not far from here, just goes through I-40 and I-77 in North Carolina. Very busy agency. My first 2 years was there. Throughout that time there, I worked patrol. I did traffic. I went from traffic to they started a DWI task force. I worked on a DWI task force for roughly, I don't know, my last 6 or 7 months I was there. But throughout that time, man, I was able to gain some awesome experience with some people, because it's a very fast-paced agency. You may run 50, 60, 70 calls a night like some of the other busier agencies in this area. And with that being said, we constantly had a very high gang violence rate up there. So there was always homicides every weekend, shootings every weekend, stabbings, fights, you name it. And so that kind of helped progress a little bit quickly, helped me progress a little bit quickly compared to some other places. Because there's some places, you, just as you know, that you may go and you may not work, and you may not answer any calls all night long, or you may answer five calls a night. But I didn't work for a place like that at the beginning. I always kind of had a thing, man, I picked up on things fairly quickly. If you show me something, you know, once, I'm a visual person, but if you show it to me and I get the gist of it, I seem to pick it up pretty quickly. And luckily, you know, at the time, I think I had put in for the traffic division, and, you know, there's some people that I think that would complain about it at the time. They're like, man, you know, he ain't been here but a year, you know, need to leave him on patrol and that kind of stuff. And so my first year was on patrol. And then after that, I kind of went to a specialized division within the agency. And then I did other things there. And in that time, man, like I said, you get to work everything from homicides to, you know, your barking to your fraud complaints across the country. So you get to do all kinds of things. It was neat. I left there after 2 years and went to a sheriff's office in another county that was nearby. It's called Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. That's off of US 321, and that runs technically from our mountains in North Carolina, and it goes all the way to Charlotte, if you kind of gives you an idea on where it's at. And so that was a much slower paced agency, but it was, I think at the time, when you leave somewhere busy like that and crazy things going on, you're kind of excited to get somewhere a little bit, I guess, a little bit more slowed down. I did that for 2 years. In the time I was there, I just worked patrol, man, I helped train people and stuff like that. But when I went to Brookford, I worked there for 2 years as well. And so at the same time I was working at Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, I was working part-time at Brookford. The chief that was there at the time, older fella, great guy. He just was burned out and had no envision to want to do anything else new. And so he was ready to go. And so when he decided he was going to retire, they posted the position. And, man, I was like, I did really well with the town. I did really well with the city council members and stuff like that. And so when the position came open, I didn't apply for it originally. I told everybody, I said, man, I wasn't going to apply. I had several people calling me and telling me, man, you need to apply for this position. And I was like, man, I said, I'm, you know, at the time I was 24. I was like, I'm 24 years old, man. I can't, I don't know. It sounds like a lot of responsibility. And it is a lot of responsibility, you know, no matter what the size of the agency is, because you have, still everything falls under you. And, we get our crime just like anywhere else. And so, at the time, I thought, man, you know, it was kind of, I was nervous about doing it. I wasn't really sure if it was going to be the right move. And more than anything, I think at the time I was worried about the perception of what somebody else might think. And that's easy to get into. So you get people that are like, because you know, before you put in, like, man, they ain't got no business applying for this. You know, you see young. But I had a lot of experience and just good mentors in place just in the time that I was in there. You know, in the last 2 years that I had worked at Lincoln County Sheriff's Office while working at Brookford full time, the chief had me doing other things. So, you know, I began to pick up really well. He's like, well, I need your help with recruitment. So I worked on recruitment. Then I worked on hiring and training people. Then it was, managing the systems and then working on the budget and all these things. So then I moved up to kind of being the administrative officer. So at this point, I'm doing everything that the chief was doing. And so that's why I think everybody felt that I was capable of doing it. You know, it's a small town. It's not anything major, but, you know, I think everybody kind of thought, like, he can do it. He's been doing this job for 2 years and helping the chief out. So he's definitely able to do it. And so when the position came available, like I said, I wasn't going to apply. The last day before the position closed, I ran into two people in the town. And they were like, did you apply for that job like I told you to? And I said, nah, man. And they were like, why? And I said, you know, I just don't know how that's going to look. I said, you know, with my years of experience, I said, I feel like maybe I should give it some more time. And they're like, no, you got this. You need to apply. Like, you do an awesome job. And so I did. And the process went through. They had several applicants. A lot of applicants were more qualified, in my opinion, than what I was. But I think they were looking for something new, something young, something kind of fresh. And that was what the town said. You know, they had the older chief that had been there for so long. I think he had been there the last 15 years. He was closer to 70 years old or getting close up to that age. And so they were like, man, we got to do something to draw some people into the agency. And, you know, your energy's great, your smile is great, all these things they kept saying. And they liked the way that I thought about things. And I've always been told my entire life that I've got an old soul. And so, you know, people would, my entire life, they're like, man, he's got an old soul. And so the people that mentored me too were old school officers, man, that had, you know, been around in the time when they were clocking people with mag lights for nothing, man, and stuff. And so, you know, those were the kind of people that I learned a lot, you know, gained a lot of respect for. And so it progressed me, man, quicker than the average officer, I think. And so when that, and I was just blessed to be in the right place at the right time. And to have the position of doing what I was doing with Brookford previously before the chief thing came open, because that just prepared me for the exact job. So when I applied for the job, they call me, man, and I go in. There's a process. You had to put a PowerPoint together, some testing, all this other stuff to go together like a normal chief selection board. And I thought, man, I left out of there something how I did. And what ended up happening was, I think after they'd done their interviews, their first round of interviews, the mayor was actually the tiebreaker. So there was two city councilmen who was like, man, hell no, he's too young. And then there was the other two were like, he's really intelligent, he did a great job. I think that he could do this job, and they wanted me in. And so that was after the first round of interviews, I believe. And so they said, the mayor was like, well, you know what, I'm the tiebreaker. And that's what I found out later on. And he's like, I want him in here. And so he votes, and I get the position. So I get called one night at home, and they're like, would you be willing to come in and talk to us Monday morning? And I'm like, yeah. And so I get in there, and they offer me the position, man. And since I've gotten in here, you know, I've done everything I can to bust my ass, man, to try to change that narrative, because, you know, you get so many people that are like, yeah, that with the age discrimination, man, is real. So you get so many people, man, that just they think that you can't do it because your age, man, and they discount you, man, really before you even get started. And so I came in here, man, with the mindset of the things that I wanted to change. And I put a plan of action together. You know, at the time, we didn't have a pay plan or a pay incentive plan. So if you're here this long, this is what you get. If you're here this long, it's what you get. And so I put those things together. And then after doing that, you know, we put a proper ranking structure together where I consisted of a captain and a sergeant and some other people to rely on some other duties that we had. You know, we didn't have, and when I came in, everything was evident. Everything was on paper, I'm sorry. And so I went out and I got us a records management system so that we were able to electronically manage our records and stuff. We didn't have anything. We didn't have computers in the car, man. And that's how old school this guy was. He believed everything by paper. When you went in there, it was the 90s, man. And so that was also a very important part of my career, man, because not only did I do it on on electronically, you know, as a young guy, but I also had the opportunity of working as an old school police department. I was handwriting reports. I was, you know, rolling people's fingers and prints and stuff, man, with ink. I was doing everything old school, man, because that's how he ran it. So I got the opportunity to see what it's like, you know, then and now. And so, you know, that just made me want to come in and increase it. And it was great that I had that versatility, that I was able to see what it's like in a newer department while also working there, man. But it was cool because I was able to see so many different things and how people do things and how he used to do it back in the day, because that's how he did it back in the day. And that's how the other part-time guys were doing it back in the day. And they just, you know, one of those things that he was in the mindset of, it's always been done that way. This is the way it works. This is the way we're going to do it. And that happens, but especially.
Yeah, he must have been a real treat to work with.
He definitely was. He was a real treat to work with.
I bet, dude. It doesn't sound like any of the problems we have in law enforcement at all.
No, man, absolutely not.
70 years old, still sticking around. Yeah, it's exactly ideal where we want to be in this profession.
That's exactly it, man. That's exactly it. And
let's say it's a rare day, but I have ran into people who are like, our chief is 65, but he's amazing. It doesn't happen typically that way, but. Yeah. There are. We had a group come in here and they were like, yeah, no, the chief's great to us. He's so good. But rarely it's, you know, I think everybody experienced that person doesn't want things to change. I think people don't want to change in general in life. And that's where all the exciting things happen is in the change. That's where all the good stuff is. That's where all the gold is in the change.
He was, you know, as far as a person, he was great, man. Police chief wise, he's just done. You know, he was retired on duty, and so he just didn't give a damn. And that was great though, in one way, because you know everybody liked where they worked at, because like, man, you know, he was the same kind of old school mentality that, you know, he's going to back his officers to no end. And so you lose that now in today's society with a lot of the leaders. You know, the backing is huge, and so I got that. You know, that's little qualities like that I was able to learn from him, that like, you know, this is what people want. This is what people want to come to work and not feel like their job is in jeopardy at all the time. And feel, you know, every day, you know, the job is dangerous enough. The job has got enough bad problems as it is. And the media hates us. So it was like, why go to work? And that's what I find now for recruitment. That's how I was able to get people in. It's like, let them know, like, we're going to back you. You know, if you do something, if you, as long as you're not doing anything unethical, illegal, or immoral, we're going to back you. You know, we really don't give a damn what, you know, how you get it done. It's the fact that you got it done, that nobody got hurt, and you were trying to do it the right way. And a lot of places have forgot that. So working for somebody like him did give me that edge, but that retired on duty stuff, man, it happens everywhere. And so,
I'm going to jump in here real quick and just say that, you know, it's funny that you think the media hates us. I actually think the media loves us, because we're the reason why they have the generation of revenue that they have, because they can take us. The media loves us as their punching bag.
Yep.
Or their voodoo doll, however you want it, because we make the media a ton of money. You understand how the media works. That's why the things happen the way that they do. You make a boatload of money when there's people who are constantly checking media and watching media. That's how advertising works. Attention is currency in business. Hence why you have Mr. Beast, who I thought of earlier, who's 25 years old and worth $10 billion. So, you know, contrary to what people have said about your ability to maybe run this organization at such a young age, I would also argue that maybe for a lot of people, you might be too young, but Mr. Beast is worth $10 billion, self-made. How did that happen? Right?
Yep.
I think Mark Zuckerberg was the owner and a billionaire of Facebook before he was 30. You know, I think if I could be incorrect on those factual data, but it was close. I mean, there's a lot of people. You go to like Forbes 30 under 30. Yep. It doesn't mean that you're not capable of doing these things. It's just that people aren't used to somebody being this young. So, you know, I wouldn't worry about what other people think. I think we can always prove to people who we are by our actions. Let the work do the talking.
Absolutely. No.
What's the correlation to live PD? Or on patrol live? I'm sorry, on patrol live.
Yeah, on patrol live. As far as how we got in there and everything, or how
tell me about how that all went down. Yeah.
So, when I worked at Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, there was a producer that actually came out and was looking at riding with that sheriff's office at the time. I don't know what happened, but it fell through. But when the producer came out, the sheriff put him with me to ride. And at that time, I think we ended up getting in a few things that night, and we just kind of maintained contact after that. And so later on down the road, when he found out that I became chief of police, he's like, shut up, man. He's like, for your age, man, he's like, that's cool. So he's like, we need to come down there and check you guys out. And so he came out here and gave us a shot, man. And of course, that's another thing, man. When you're in the town this small, people are like, man, ain't a damn reason, man, that Old Patrol Live should be down here, man, and ride with you guys when there's other agencies that are more popular and stuff like that. But the great thing about Old Patrol Live, man, is that it shows so much transparency, man. And the crazy thing about it is, like, it's not just all action-packed and adrenaline junk like Cops was, man. It's a lot more of the fact of just what they do every day. And you get that beginning, middle, and end, where many times on Cops or something, man, if you've ever watched it, you know, you're getting just the high adrenaline-packed chase or whatever the hell took place. And then at the end of it, that's just what you don't know what happened, who went to jail, what the case is. But at this show, man, you get that beginning, that middle, and that end part of it. And I feel like it's crucial, man, for, like, what we deal with every day, man, because you get that 5-second cell phone video, and it's like that's all anybody focuses on, man. But that beginning, middle, and end, man, is awesome. And so it gives people a different perspective. I've talked to so many people that just in our community that didn't know what we did, and for us, it was like at first I kind of was a little nervous because of the size of us as well, but you know, the town was like, they were looking for something new, young, and different, man. And so when I brought it up to them, they're like, let's give it a shot. And so we did, took a shot on it, man. And every time, man, we've had something really, you know, some interesting things go down, whether it be a chase or this. And the thing about our town is, yeah, we only have 500 people, but we're a pass-through town in North Carolina. So like I said, you got to go to the mountains and all these other places, man. You got to pass through the town. We get roughly between 80 and 100,000 vehicles that come through the town every day. And so to travel anywhere, you got to come through there. So it's different than just a small town, because at any given time you have more people in there. So from touring.
Yeah, that's interesting. And are you guys, obviously with that many cars, you're dealing with a lot of vehicle crashes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You get a crap ton of collisions. I would say that we are really, really heavy on traffic enforcement. And that's because of the collisions that we used to get and stuff, man. And so now, yeah, we're really, really heavy on speed enforcement, man, and just traffic enforcement in general. And so, I mean, you got some guys that come out here, man, and stop. You got some people that come out here and stop 40, 50, 60 vehicles a day, man, because of the side. Just, I mean, and so, yeah, we stay really busy with traffic.
And so I think it's important for everybody to figure out how you ended up here on this podcast. So maybe you could tell a little bit of that story. It's a pretty small story, but just to give some context.
I seen what you were doing, and I've been watching. You came across Facebook one day, and of course I've heard about, you know, what you guys do and your training and stuff. It's an awesome thing. Never had the experience to actually attend any, but I was really interested. You know, I've watched, you know, a lot of videos, man. You guys come up on my feed as far as Facebook and stuff like that. And so I was like, man, I need to hit him up one day and see if he'd be willing to talk or maybe you want to chat about something, man. And I just, like I said, I really enjoy what you guys do. And I just see that you talk to different people and get all these different perspectives on different things that's going on in the world, man. And I love it, man. And I like your style.
So you emailed me or messaged me, and then I think I just pretty much shuffled it over and said, why don't you just come on the podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I emailed you and you were like, save it. I think this would be great if we talk on podcasts, man. So that's kind of how that happened.
So how old are you now?
25.
Oh, you are young, dude.
Yeah.
You've been a chief for a year. It's very interesting. Like I told you yesterday, you know, beforehand, that I literally met a 25-year-old chief here yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How's that received from your 9 part-timers that you have? How do they receive you as a 25-year-old chief?
At first, man, there were some of the older guys that were in there that were like, they didn't really want to listen, you know, or hear what I had to say, because to them it was just, he's young, man. I've got 20 years in, I've got 25 years in, I've got 29 years in, some of our guys. And they didn't really want to hear what you had to say, man. But overall, I would say majority of everybody that has worked with me will go out and say, and not toot my own horn, but they'll say, man, he's really intelligent. He talks, and I have half of this damn job, dude, is common sense. If you've got a little damn common sense, man, it takes you a long damn ways. You know, that's half the battle, finding an applicant, somebody that's got good, reasonable judgment, common sense. And I've been good with those things. So those things, man, I think made a lot of people feel comfortable. And I'm very, man, pro law enforcement, as long as you're doing what you're supposed to do. And, and so I'll get out here till Friday night. I came out here and worked Friday night. I was on patrol live. I chased a motorcycle for 20 minutes, man, probably had a 20-minute chase, man, high speeds. And, you get the backlash. Some people are like, oh, you should chase him for this, you should chase him for that, whatever the hell the case may be, man. In this case, we have a motorcycle issue in our town. They come through here. A lot of them are criminals, man, and they know that most agencies won't initiate a pursuit or try to stop a motorcycle. And so in this case, this guy was wanted on like five felony warrants for breaking into motor vehicles, assault with a deadly weapon, all these other things. And the motorcycle itself was stolen. And so it started over a red light. And these are common things that happen all the time, man. It was just one of those things that proved, like, we've got to chase people and stop them, man, because the first thing that this guy did talk to me about later on at the jail was like, the reason you chose a motorcycle, man, is because it's an escape. I mean, nobody will chase a motorcycle. And so I have different visions on shit like that, man. And that's what the guy that I worked for really enjoyed about me. And so it worked out well, but there was a few people that we had some problems with.
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook group. We have so much information going out every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
If you cast stones at every dog that barks, you'll never find your way to where you're going. Right? It's a Winston Churchill saying, and it just means that, listen, dude, anything that we do, there's always somebody or some meme that will take their position of how they live their life. And even me saying this would provoke them.
Yeah.
But if you think about where you are in life, it really resembles the behavior that you display, maybe publicly or privately on public platforms, of where you're at mentally. I saw something the other day, and I can't take credit for it, but it definitely made sense to me and resided with me in my brain. Alex Hormozi is somebody I follow, and a lot of people don't know who that is because it's a business side of thing, but the guy's a very, very big social media presence in business, very writing some crazy, amazing books for business owners. Okay. He's really, really good. And I've been just literally ingesting and, intravenously taking in his content. But some piece of content I saw the other day, he was like, I've never had somebody who was making more money than me ever criticize the work that I was doing. He's like, it's just always the other person. Or I've never had a guy who's more buff than I am, because he's obviously a fitness guy, ever criticize me for how buff I am.
Yeah.
So, you got to let this stuff roll off your back like water on a duck's back. You won't be able to focus on your work if you're sitting here listening to everybody's criticism about how you should be doing things, what you should be doing. And honestly, you got to listen, but you got to know what to listen to. Even in your own organization, there are people here who have ideas, and I applaud them for bringing them forward. And in their mind, sometimes it might be a really good idea, but it's just not. And if it is, I'm with it. I'm like, that's fucking genius. Yeah. I'm angry I didn't think of that. I'm just like, that's so good. But when somebody really is convicted on something that they believe is accurate and true, or that's what they're contributing, it doesn't mean that it's right because they feel like it's right. And I think that everybody just is so used to getting eighth place trophies that they think everything they say I'm going to do is going to be rewarded.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think I've been doing a lot of interviews over this is I brought it up on the show one night, and a lot of people didn't know that, and it doesn't make a huge difference, but it does. I had a lot of life experience at a very, very young age. And so, one night on the show, they had asked me how I got my interest in law enforcement. And I told them, I said, and that was actually one night I was up there co-hosting with Dan Abrams and Curtis Wilson. And I told them, I said, basically when I was younger, man, I was in and out of foster care, in and out of group homes, my entire life. When I was 5 years old, I knew what a crack rock was because my parents were smoking crack in front of me. My parents were, I just I knew how to go out and get it, where to buy it. You know, these are the things I grew up seeing my entire life. We were homeless. We broke into houses to find places to sleep on the floor, man. And so my entire life was around nothing but criminal activity. From the time, you know, I was 3 and 4 years old, man, all the way up until, you know, I was able to finally leave and get out at 17, man. But, you know, it's sad. It's a sad story at the time. And that's a lot of things people didn't know about me. So when I first started my career in law enforcement, you know, some of the, you know, the supervisors would be like, man, how the hell do you know that's where they hide that? That's where they put this at. That's where they do this. It was because, man, I grew up in the criminal element, seeing it my entire life. You know, like I said, at 5 years old, I knew what meth looked like. I knew what crack looked like. I knew what these things did. I knew how you smoked it, how you ingested it, what the side effects were, how people look. And so you can't teach those things. That's either, you know, some people would be like, man, you know, when you turn, they go to the aspect, man, when you, you know, when I was in law enforcement, like, you ain't got but 2 years experience at the time. And it was like, yeah, but dude, you just learned what a crack rock was, or how, what marijuana smells like when you went through basic law enforcement training. I knew what that shit was when I was five, you know, and it's sad and unfortunate, but I knew, you know, I was out watching them go get it and do these things. And I was in and out of group homes and foster homes and around all this damn shit that went on. And at the time, you know, I thought it was miserable, and I didn't know where my life was going to go, man. But later on, now that I'm doing what I do, it showed me, man, that, like, you know, that those things prepared me a lot earlier for a lot of things, man. So, you know, it would be amazing how I'd be out on calls. People couldn't believe that with, you know, 1 or 2 years experience, you knew this or you knew that. And they're like, man, you're picking it up really fast. I thought, well, yeah, maybe I am. But maybe, hell, I've been around my entire fucking life, dude. You know?
Dude, let's go back to that a little bit. So, you know, let's go back to your childhood. And you now are born into these parents who are obviously using illicit narcotics, right?
Yeah. And
when did you start realizing, like, you know, like, what was that? What was your, let's start with your early days of childhood. Like, what was that like growing up like that? Like in the early days? Tell people about the struggle of that shit.
I mean, I would, at first, when you're younger, you really don't know what it is, except for, you know, for one, my parents were in major domestics, man, my entire life. So constantly dad beating the shit out of mom. I think mom, you learn a lot about domestic violence, man, when you go through that your entire life, because your mother will not leave your father alone, which was really kind of ended up being her downfall. So, you know, she wouldn't leave him alone. So she would do well when he's in prison or she's by herself. But every time he come back out, we're back in the same predicament, you know, in those things. Like, I learned, you know, at a young age, because my mother was addicted to crack. My mother was on drugs. My dad was an alcoholic. He drank from the time he went to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning till when he woke back up at 8 o'clock in the morning because he couldn't sleep. And he'd start the same thing again. He'd roll in marijuana at that age. And you're watching these things your entire life. Not only that, when you're that age, man, they're taking you. I'm being taken to these drug houses. I'm going in here and seeing how they get it, where they go get it from, all these things, man. I'm watching how they weigh it out. I knew about all these aspects of things that I shouldn't have known. No 9-year-old should know. No 10-year-old should know. But I'm in here and watching these things, man. Because my mother had drug addictions and stuff like that, man, at one point in time, you know, she's driving me out drunk. My father's driving me out drunk. We're going out here to these houses, man, and watching them. You know, I'm sitting in drug dealers' houses while they go get what they got to get or whatever the hell goes on, or I'm watching prostitution or all this shit, man, that I shouldn't have seen. But I was directly in the middle of it. And it took me a long time to realize exactly what it was. Maybe from seeing it as a baby, man, to being at the age I was, maybe I was 7 or 8 before I really realized these things were illegal, because they're going to jail for these things. Police are coming. And that does two things, man. One, it says, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, fuck this, man. I don't never want to be, you know, in law enforcement. I don't like law enforcement, which is what I see a lot of times with the youth. However, it also did a thing for me, man. It was like, I don't want to live my fucking life like this. Like, I can't, I've got to do everything I can to get out of this. I had no way out because all my grandparents were dead, had no family growing up. So It was me and those parents, man. And there was a drive inside of me that knew that there was decisions that had to be made to not end up like that. And so I never have smoked marijuana. I never have done any illegal drugs, because I saw them so fucking often that it was like, I can't live like that, man. Something in my life's got to change to get me out of this. So I'm not a trajectory of what they're doing all over again. And the cycle repeats. And I knew that from such a young age, man. And I just, you know, like I said, I tell times, man, you know, the fear and stuff that you would go through, man. My, you know, I can remember times when I was a kid, man, my father would beat my mom's ass so bad, man. And I can remember a time he was trying to light her on fire in the house with gasoline, right? And he decided to shut us in the room. I was probably 6 years old, man. And mom was sitting there laying helpless, covered and drenched in gasoline. And I had to tie sheets around, man, like a damn movie, to a damn bedpost in there and climb down the window to run to a neighbor's house and call 911. And those were the things that I grew up doing all the time, man. And so those things don't play a direct role in law enforcement, man, but they really, really do, man, because that kind of life experience is not just something, you know, if that counts, dude, that's 15 years, that's 18 years, man, of what you've seen and done and dealt with. And, you know, I just think, you know, I'm thankful. I had to learn when I got older, man, to let those things go. And I made peace with those things. And it's hard for some people, man, to do that. But I made peace with those things. And I realized that if it wouldn't have been for all that shit that I went through, I never would have been where I'm at today, man. And that's what gave me that drive to want to work harder, push harder, want to be a chief one day. I always told myself, man, not only do I want to be in law enforcement, I want to be a chief of police one day. Never in the hell would have thought it happened as early as it did. But it was a goal.
When did you start separating yourself from, like, the mentality of the, do you have siblings?
Only child.
Okay. So, like, when do you start making that decision, looking around, like, I can't believe these are my fucking parents. I can't believe this is my life. And what were the reactions? Were you running away? Were you trying to find friends to stay with? Like, tell me about that.
Dude, it was honestly like, I think the time I started realizing I don't want to end up like this was I kept ending up in foster care. And so my mother, man, you know, she had the right head on her shoulder. She wanted to do right. And she couldn't leave my father alone. And so when, like I said, when she was alone, things were great. She's off drugs. She's not drinking. She's doing the right thing. And so I would end up in foster care after a major domestic where they found out that I was involved in this or involved in that because police come there and they forward the reports over to social services and then child protective services show up. And when those things would happen, man, you know, it's crazy when you're 8, 9 years old and you know when they get there, you got to lie because, you know, you're trying to lie at the door and tell them that this isn't happening. This isn't happening because even though all this fucked up shit's going on, you still don't want to end up in foster care or a group home, man. For some reason, you'd still rather be with your parents. So, you know, I'm in the door and I'm being told to lie to DSS and this thing and these, all these things that go on, man, as such a young kid. But when I would end up in foster care, those were the times I'd be like, I cannot fucking live like this. Like, I something's got to change it because my father did the same thing that his father done, you know, and so on and so on and so on. And, you know, you just see every fucking thing in the world that you're not supposed to do, man. And I think at those, so I would go into foster care.
What was that like? Let's stop there. Like, what was it like to get, like, who were you being placed with? Just volunteer? How awful were those people?
Those people, man, it would range, man. You had some people, I think, that really wanted to care for you. And then there were some people that were just there, felt like to just get a check. They didn't give a damn about you. There was never that atmosphere of people I felt like treated me like family, like you see on television or something, or that. I never dealt with any of that. It was always, I was in this home, man, and you felt awkward and odd and you're there with a bunch of other kids, man. And it was miserable to me because you weren't at home. And, when I would go there, my mother and father would split up because social services would issue like stipulations, like you got to leave him alone. He can't come around the child. You need to get a job. You need to get your own place, these kind of things. And my mother really did care because she would go and do these things. She'd do it long enough. And my father would even play the game with her that she could do it long enough. And then the minute I get back home, because DSS would award me back custody with my parents, 6 months, a year later, 3 months, however long I was in there each time, they'd get right back together and the same shit would happen. 6 months later, I'm back in the same predicament. 2 months later, I'm back in the same predicament. So I'm in and out, in and out, in and out. And another thing is, man, you see what other people treat their kids like, man, in these homes and other children in the home, man. So it was never a pleasurable experience, man, at all. I recently did a leadership lunch program in this county, and I actually went face-to-face and met some of the social workers that were involved in my life back when I was younger. And we talked about a lot of this stuff, man. And like I said, I just don't think anybody really knows what it's like, man, until you're in there and going through those things. But I would say, in all honesty, man, none of it, I don't ever feel like I was in a better place than where I was at. And it sounds crazy to hear that. But now, knowing what I know and being the age that I am, I'm like, I definitely was. But you think about all the shit you were going through, you're in a better place than what you was. But as a child, you never know that, man. And you don't feel it. You were safer, but you weren't cared or loved for, and nobody gave a damn about you, man. So you were just you were like a number.
How do you survive through things like this? And like, when did your environment start recognizing that you were actually like a good kid? Were you ever troubled at any point?
Dude, and it sounds crazy, man, to go back and think about it, but I never was a bad kid, man. And everybody that I talked to, you know, that will talk about it, they say, man, he was always a good kid. And it was because I was so fearful that like I was going to be worse off than my parents. It's insane, but I was so fearful that I was going to be worse off than my parents. I never got in trouble, man. You know, I had every opportunity to smoke weed and do this and do that, man. Never did, because I saw it every day and I knew what it did and I knew what road it took you down. And that's where it leads me to now, because, you know, people, I'll go out here and deal with people on the street, man, and they're like, you don't know my life. You don't know what I've been through, blah, 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 man. They got all this bullshit excuses on why they are where they are today, man. But in reality, it's all series of choices that lead you to where you're at. I mean, that's what it is. It is choices. You have to have that mental willpower, man, to get out of that, to survive something like that, and let alone become the fucking chief of police. You know, it's not really heard of, but it can be done if you have the right mindset, man, and you know where you want to go in life. For me, I knew, man, if I don't get the fuck out of this environment, because I've always been a believer of, you are who you surround yourself with. And I believe that, you know, because if you surround yourself by a bunch of damn idiots that's doing dumb shit all the time, you're going to be a bunch of damn idiots that's doing dumb shit all the time. But if you go out here, man, and you decide that, you know, I want to surround myself around good people that are doing the right thing, which is what I always tried to do. You know, I started working, you know, probably at the age of 14 with a worker's permit at McDonald's, man. So I was around working people, man, at 14. I became a shift manager at like 16. As a matter of fact, I couldn't even damn close some of the doors in the place, man, because they wouldn't give me keys because I wasn't 18. So they had to give somebody that was 18 the keys to shut the damn doors because I couldn't hold the keys, but I was still running the place. So I had leadership qualities at such a young age, but it was because I was mature, man. I matured very, very, very early, and it was...
No choice. You had no choice. You had no choice. You had to be mature. You weren't allowed to be a kid. You weren't ever allowed to be a kid. And dude, a lot of people go through that.
It's insane, man. It's insane, but... It's crazy to think how often stuff like that happens to people, man. But it's so sad, man. Like, knowing what I know now, man, and talking to people on the street and stuff like that, I hate to hear excuses, though, man. So I hold people to a very high standard, because if I can do it, I know somebody else can do it, right? Like, if I can make the right choices and go through all the bullshit that I dealt with in my life and come out and still smile and be who I am, you can do the same thing and make the right choices as well. So
I think it gives hope to those who have the right cadence and the right DNA, because I will also give some thought to the idea that somebody may be so fucking broken because they didn't have the right DNA to be as resilient as you were, where they fall into this trodden path of destruction, self-destruction. And that could be a number of mental issues that were developed maybe even at birth, but certainly the environment didn't help resolve those mental issues. So yeah, you got a guy like me who has very good emotional intelligence, can process information. I was blessed with obviously some good DNA. And I don't mean that physically, because it's not true, but mentally some good DNA. I was put through a war zone, different than yours for sure, but albeit a just different war as a kid. Yeah. Mentally ill parents, like just the crazy, you know, like crazy mentally ill siblings. Like I was literally in a fucking circus growing up. And that followed me into my adulthood, unfortunately, where I was now the functioning adult and, you know, becoming the world for them. I was the one who was actually a functional person. So everything just kind of like came on. Like once I had the responsibilities, like we need this, we need help, we need this, we need that, right? Like I need this. What do we do here? What do we do now? Like, it was, you know, I became like the parent to all of them.
Yeah. Wow, man. And that speaks a lot, man, on character alone, man, because you see, you'll talk to people now, man. And that's a big thing that I don't think people realize too, is it happens every day that as, and it did with me, you're raising your parents, man, sometimes because, the responsibility, man, that the children are raising their parents. They have the level head on their parents.
Yeah, so. The real thing, bro. There's a great book. You should fuck with it, dude. I talk about it all the time in the podcast. It's called, Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. And it's heavy, brother. I gave it to somebody recently and I called her up and I said, how's the book going? She said, I had to stop at chapter 2 for a little bit. I was literally just covered in tears while I was reading it. And I think it's important too, to read, because number one, I think you can never stop learning. But number two, if you have kids, which I don't think you do yet, I could tell you don't.
I just had my child.
Yeah, you're not exuding major dad vibes yet. Like new dad vibes, sure, but not major dad vibes. I can pick up on that shit. You can check that book out, dude. It's really good.
Will,
you're gonna get that. You're gonna get the quality too.
Yeah, I definitely will check that out.
That's interesting. So then, you're raising your parents. Not an uncommon story. Certainly, everybody has their own story, but.
Yeah.
A lot of similar qualities, and a lot of people listening to this probably resonating with it.
And when I see those things, man, that go on, you know, for me, and at a very young age, man, I met there was a skating rink, man, and I talk about this we did like a profile piece with Spectrum News a couple months ago, and I talk about this. I met an off-duty officer who worked at a skating rink, man, and from being a little kid, man, I would go roller skating at this rink, and every weekend it was as much as I could, man, when I was home. But then I'd go visit for 6 months and, you know, a year at a time or whatever the case may be from being in these homes. And when I would come back, I would still talk to that same officer. His name was Ray Ollis. That officer or deputy at the time is now my captain for Brookford Police Department. So life became full circle, man, that he now works for me. But it's amazing we were able to keep touch over all those years. And, you know, I think about how he would sit down and talk to me. He didn't know at first really what was going on for the first, I don't know, probably till I was, I met him at 5, probably. But when I was about 12, 13, you know, 14 years old, I finally explained to him, you know, he would ask where you're going, man. You'd be here for a while, then you're gone. You're here and you're gone. So I explained that to him. And, you know, it's disgusting, man, because now when I see the culture, man, that law enforcement is headed and all these negative things that people say about police, man, and how we do our damn jobs. And, you know, to think, man, that he took that time to spend with me, man, because he was a mentor for me. And that's why he works for me now, man. And if it wouldn't have been for him giving me guidance I was able to ask him certain questions about normal level headed shit. That somebody had to give me some level-headed advice, and he was that guy for me, man. And so when I really started getting him involved and talking to him about my life and what was going on and asking him questions, man, and I was so intrigued by what he did from the age of 5, man, because police were the good guys, right? They always showed up with domestics when my parents were acting like a fool, man, and police showed up, and when they would show up, man, it was like everything was better. So for me, they were the good guys. For him, when I met him, he was a good guy. And I think he didn't have to sit down and do these things, man. You know, originally law enforcement was designed to just preserve life, man, and maybe protect property, you know, and now these things have escalated. You got to be a fucking social worker. You got to be a fucking counselor and a therapist, man. You got all this other shit that you've got to do, and they're adding it daily. Animal control, whatever the hell the case may be, man. And these guys come out here and they do it, man. Not for the money, because there's no money in it, but they do it, man, because they really want to make a difference. They want to help people, and they deal with all the bullshit that goes on. And now it's so, so disrespectful, man, because I think about somebody like Ray and the time that he took to spend time with me, man, as a kid that developed me to being where I am today. If he wouldn't have done that, I don't know where I would have been, but he didn't have to do that shit. Nobody, you know, we don't have to do half the things that we do, but we do it, man, because every day there's a new damn responsibility being added on to you. It's not just law enforcement anymore. It's law enforcement, EMS, social work, and counseling. I mean, you do every damn thing, animal control, and we deal with it. And, you know, so to hear the disgust and the disgrace, man, that people paint the picture of, you know, we're just out here killing every damn body and doing this and doing that, man, it's all racially motivated. horseshit. Complete horseshit. So
we know.
It's disgusting, man.
Well, I have a couple last questions because I do have to wrap. I was just told that you heard it. Where are your parents now?
Father is in prison, and my mother got older and chilled out, man, and she's doing great. So she really had a change, man, when he went to prison, and has been a different person, man, for probably the last 8 or 9 years, man. So father's in prison for drugs and a bunch of other shit now, man. And so he never learned, never grew up, and I don't really feel like he will. But my mother, man, she did, and age factored in a lot of that, man. You get too old to do the things that you used to do.
What does she think of you being the chief of police now at such a young age? How does it make her feel?
Dude, I think it's amazing for her. She just kind of, she's enjoyed, man. I mean, she never wished any bad for me, man. But, and you know, we had to rectify our relationship when we, you know, as I got older. But now that she sees where I'm at now, man, she's amazed and she's very supportive. And it took a long time to rectify that relationship at first, man, because you like I said, it's hard to grasp all the shit you go through. And then one day you get older and you don't have to put up with it no more. Some people just say, fuck you. And they go off about their business, man. They don't want anything to do with their parents, you know? And I didn't. I had to find it in my heart, man. And you know, I do believe in God and those things, man. And so I had to find that strength to forgive and move on, man. And when I was able to rectify that relationship and realize she's not the person she was anymore, and she made those changes, you know? And so you can't dwell on shit in the past, man. And so now, you know, we're great, man. And she's very proud.
I bet she's so proud. Yeah. She knows what she put you through and what you ended up becoming. Probably just a big relief for her and takes away from the guilt. I'm sure she's carrying a ton of guilt.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. I think that she was very, very guilty, man. So to see where I'm at.
No, she's broken. I mean, she's a broken person. It's clear as day. So she had her own problems. And unfortunately, unfortunately, you were conceived and brought into the, you know, you weren't asked to be born. You were forced to be born.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can't imagine that you, do you have a relationship with your father at all?
Nope. No, man. You know, when he gets, you know, I may every once in a while get a phone call from the prison, man, for him to speak to me or something like that. But I don't think we'll ever really have a relationship. You know, at first, he was really fucking thrown off, I believe, when he heard that I got into law enforcement. I think that broke his heart, man. You know, like, how the hell did he end up doing what I hate people doing, man? And he's very anti-law enforcement. And so, broke him, man. But I think now, as time went on, all these years that went by, kind of now, he's just kind of, he's chilled out, man, and doesn't, you know, he doesn't wish anything bad or anything. I think he's still, in his own fucked up way, loves his son, but, by no means, man, will we ever have a decent relationship or anything like that. Just those pieces were just too far gone, and it doesn't help when you've never changed. He's never changed. He never grew up.
Will, maybe we should do this again, man. I think there's more stuff to go over here. Really good conversation, man. I think that's a cool part of your story is the beginning. I think that's really inspiring and good shit, dude. So I think you're doing great things for the world, and I don't think you're too young to do shit. Don't let other people, you know, like I said, just you know, you're on the right path, my friend. You really are.
Thank you, man. Thank you, dude. I appreciate it.
I don't see you as a 25-year-old guy. I just see you one guy to another. That's it, you know?
Man, dude, thank you. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you having me, man, and be more than happy to do it again. So
yeah, so just DM me. We'll get this together soon. So I appreciate you being here, brother.
All right, dude. Thank you so much.
I got to go. I'm gonna get yelled at, dude. I'll talk to you.
You're good, dude.
Thank
Be safe.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure meeting you, dude. I really had a good time today. No bullshit.
You too, brother. Be safe.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.